Your Last Meal is sponsored by Heritage Distilling Company. Craft and small batch vodkas, gins, and whiskeys. Drink locally, drink responsibly.
Cairo, Seattle.
Bell, and this is Your Last Meal, a show about famous people and the stories behind the foods they love most. Today on the program, Linda Perry. You know Linda Perry as the front woman for Four Non Blondes, the band responsible for the 1992 hit that I loved so much that I put it on a mixtape for my mom. We're talking about the song What's Up, which happens to be one of my favorite karaoke songs. And I thought, since we don't have the rights to it, maybe we could do a little karaoke now so people know what song we're talking about.
Are you kidding? I love it.
I love this song.
Where do we start?
Well, should we start with a, and I wake in the morning and I step outside and I take a deep breath and I get real high and I scream from the top of my lungs, what's going on? Ugh. Such
beautiful.
A good song. Yeah, it's a real belter. Linda Perry.
And I said, hey, yeah, yeah.
Hey, yeah, yeah. I said, hey. You will note that the words what's up never actually appear in the song.
Ooh.
That's a fact.
That's a little piece of trivia.
It's a little piece of trivia. Linda Perry wrote that song because she is a songwriter. She was inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame in 2015. She founded two record labels, and she has composed and produced songs for so many artists. Christina Aguilera, Gwen Stefani, Pink, Weezer, Ziggy Marley, Adele, the Dixie Chicks, and the list goes on and on.
I just want to say, as a producer, someone who's interested in behind the scenes,
yeah,
you may not know who Linda Perry is by her name, but she is one of the most successful, incredible songwriters and producers in the last couple years. It's so exciting to have her on.
Totally. And I feel like that's the best way to be famous, because you can walk around and people aren't bugging you, yet you have the bank account of a famous person and also the glory of getting to do what you love, which is writing songs and making music. Now, Linda is not what you would call a food person.
Look at it this way. I eat to survive. It's not for comfort.
Her real indulgence, the thing that she does crave, is music. So I chatted with Oxford professor Charles Spence, who studies things like how the music you're listening to can actually accentuate the flavor of the food you're eating.
We've been able to build up now kind of a repertoire of music that will accentuate sweetness, sourness, bitterness, that will bring out the creaminess of a chocolate. We're able to bring out the spiciness of a spicy mango salad simply by playing the appropriate music. So this is the whole new world of sensploration, if you will.
Spence will also tell us why people love to order tomato juice on airplanes. Don't ask about ginger ale. We don't get into that. But right now, my conversation with Linda Perry. You have written so many hit songs for yourself and so many other pop artists. I know there's not an easy way to describe it, and there's probably not a formula. But when you're writing a pop song and you're trying to make it a pop song as opposed to like indie rock or any other kind of music, is there any kind of formula? Like, how do you make a pop song that you know is going to be a hit?
I don't do that. I just write songs and it has to be a hit to me. Like, it has to touch me in some way. I don't really focus on what other people want. I can't do anything like that. That would be me chasing something, and I don't believe songs should be, you're closing off the opportunity that the song could have if you're already premeditating a hit. Like, I don't know how to do that. I just write for my emotions, and that's about it.
Do you notice certain things that the songs have in common when they do become really popular, the elements about them that people seem to really connect with?
The things with my songs that have been biggest hits, they're all completely different. I just really focus on, if it's authentic and true to me, that's when I usually have a successful song. But to me, some of my best songs have not been successful, have not been on the charts. But I'm a true believer that the song already exists and you're just tapping into it, and it's kind of like pushing play. When you're ready for the song comes, you push play, and there it is.
What would your last meal be?
Well, I'm vegan, And I'm very weird about food because it depends on my mood of what I'll eat. But I usually, to be quite honest, I love green drinks. I drink juices all the time. People laugh at me and think I'm a weirdo. But as far as what I was going to eat for my last meal, if I were going to eat something, I would probably, let me look at it this way. I eat to survive. It's not for comfort. Yeah, I'm not one of those people. My wife, Sarah, loves food. Like, she likes to explore, you know, being vegan, it's very hard to find food that's actually really good because vegan restaurants tend to over garlic, over season, over salt. So we go to places, like there's a place called Crossroads. She loves it there, but she's more, she loves to explore the food. Me, I just got, if there's a grain and a vegetable, I'm like happy with that. I tell them, don't put any salt on it, don't put any oil. And she laughs at me all the time.
Interesting. So if I had to nail you down, though, and make you pick one last thing, though, that you were going to eat, something that's your favorite food, like if it's your birthday and you could choose anything, what would you want?
Well, I love sweets. So I'd probably say, you know, I'll be okay with having a vegan donut over at from Baby Cakes. I love that place. I think their baked goods are really great. So I'd probably go for something sweet because that is my weakness.
What's your favorite kind of donut?
Well, they do a maple salted donut that's really good. And they don't fry it. They bake them. You know, I'm telling you, I'm a weirdo. I don't like getting involved with fried food. Like, I don't care if it's my last day on this planet. Like, I'll still probably eat broccoli, a grain, and probably just drink a big juice. I wouldn't look at that as my thing that I'm going to focus on.
I'm so surprised that people make fun of you because I'm assuming you live in LA. Doesn't everybody drink green juice and eat super healthy?
Yeah, but I'm really over the top.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm pretty over the top.
I was wondering if you were always that way, even when you were a kid, if food just was never important, if you would rather be playing or like hanging out with friends or play music or whatever than eating.
Well, my mom is Brazilian, and she made weird food. So it's like, I think, you know, and then we didn't have money. So we lived a lot off of my mom trying to turn Spam into some kind of Portuguese delicacy, you know?
Yeah.
We drank powdered milk. I've had tuna every single way it possibly could be made. So my first experiences of food weren't that great because it was always like it was experiments, you know, that my mom was having. When you don't have money, you don't have the pleasure of having these wonderful meals. Again, you're only surviving. There's a lot of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and American cheese sandwiches. When I got older, you know, I turned into a drug addict and I didn't eat a lot then because I was on drugs and I'd rather be on drugs and spend my money on drugs than drinking. And then when I got older after that, I did get money finally. And then I started experimenting with, oh, I could go to fancy restaurants and I could eat all this. And I did that, but then it didn't feel good to my system. Then I decided I'm going to go completely vegan. Then I became macrobiotic. And now I'm just confused.
I love it. this is your eating history.
That's my eating history.
So if food is not an indulgence, what is an indulgence in your life? What is something that's like, ooh, I look forward to this thing?
I love music. I look forward to going into my studio anytime. Like, you know, right now we've been here all morning and I found a piano over in the room and I saw it and it's like I jones for it. Like, it's all I want to do. I love it in every way, even if I'm not playing it and I'm just listening to an artist playing me a song, touching a microphone, being in any kind of creative environment is where my pleasure is. And number one is my son. I have an incredible, beautiful son that I can't get enough of, you know, and he is definitely filling so much of my heart and he helps me create music. So when it comes to music, I'm in it. It's just who I am. It's not something that I do. It's my constitution.
What song or what band is your comfort food?
I'm a big Pink Floyd fan. I love listening to Dark Side of the Moon. It's one of my favorite albums. And then, you know, Tapestry from Carole King, Bowie, I can't get enough of. I'm pretty open about music. I love listening to classical music in the car. I don't listen to a lot of music. I only listen to it when I'm in the studio or sometimes in the car. But if I'm home, no music is played, really. I enjoy the silence as well.
Linda mentioned her wife, Sarah. And the Sarah in question is Sarah Gilbert, who played Darlene Connor on Roseanne, who is now again playing Darlene Connor on Roseanne because that show is back. She's also the co-host and creator of the CBS talk show, The Talk. And back in 2014, Linda planned an elaborate proposal for Sarah. So she's going to tell us her sweet engagement story at the end of the episode. Okay, so as we mentioned earlier, Linda is not really into eating, something that is so hard to understand for 99.9% of us who are just trying not to think about eating all day and trying not to eat everything in sight. So I had to really nail her down on a food for her last meal. And you heard her, she basically like reluctantly picked vegan donuts. I just have to comment and say, we have had so many vegans on the show.
Yeah, you're right. Maybe I never thought about it.
Maybe the cliche of kind of Hollywood people just eating super, super healthy and being vegans is true. And lucky for you, we already did a super fun donut episode when I had Top Chef winner Brooke Williamson on. So that episode was about a year ago. I think it was last March or April. You can learn about the history of the donut. And I brought a bunch of Seattle cops in the studio to eat donuts and talk about where the cops and donut stereotype came from. Did you ever have any feelings about not wanting to be seen in a donut shop as a cop because of the stereotype?
Yeah, when I first got hired, yeah, I remember an academy instructor telling us, hey, one thing about being a cop is you can't go around eating donuts, you know. Don't perpetuate the stereotype.
When you're in the academy, everyone talks about not eating donuts. But, you know, I run the Explorer program, and so one of the things that we do is routinely I get them donuts. So we're already training our youth as officers to actually be prepared to have donuts in their career.
The next generation.
Next generation. Donut lovers.
So go back to the archives and check out that episode if you haven't already. But back to Linda Perry, her true love is music. So we'll talk about the relationship between music and food with Professor Charles Spence. He's an experimental psychologist at the University of Oxford. He spent 15 years researching how sounds can affect the enjoyability of food. He tells us what to listen to make oysters taste most delicious, what to listen to if you want something spicy to taste even spicier, and how restaurants are using this knowledge to enhance your eating experience. So we're going to take a quick break, but take this moment to subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. Leave us a review. It is so, so helpful, and we're feeling the love, and we'll be right back. It is cocktail hour here on Your Last Meal with our sponsor, Heritage Distilling Company. And let's just call this ad Braggy McBragovich. As you may have heard, this podcast is nominated for a James Beard Award. And we just found out that Heritage Distilling Company's BSB, their brown sugar bourbon, was named Best Flavored Whiskey in the World at the 2018 World Whiskies Awards. Best Flavored Whiskey in the World. That is quite the honor. I would say the whiskeys are the James Beard Award of whiskey. So there is no better time to try the brown sugar bourbon. You can find it at select retailers in 26 states or online at heritagedistilling.com, which is where you can order any of their fine spirits and have them delivered right to your door. Several years ago, I embarked on a very hard-hitting, important radio story. I wondered, why do so many people order tomato juice on airplanes? And not quite so much anywhere else. I interviewed several people for the story because, as I mentioned, hard-hitting story, I'm a responsible journalist. And one of the people I interviewed was Professor Charles Spence, head of the Crossmodal Research Laboratory, or as he would say, laboratory, at Oxford in the UK. He'd spent the past 15 years researching the relationship between sound and taste. Now, some theorize that people order tomato juice on an airplane because it is the most filling beverage. So you don't get free food anymore. You sometimes get a little bit of a snack, but you might be hungry and the tomato juice will fill you up. But Charles has his own ideas.
You know, a quarter of the population who fly admits the fact that while they order tomato juice or Bloody Mary in the air, they will never do it on the ground. So what's going on? I think it's about the different atmosphere in the air. which differs from what's on the ground in three ways. It's drier, there's a lower cabin air pressure, but crucially, the forgotten factor, I think, is the noise of the engines, which comes in at about 80 to 85 decibels. And we predicted back in 2014, I bet that has an impact. And scientists over in Cornell the next year were able to demonstrate that if you listen to airplane engine noise, it really does suppress your ability to taste sweetness in a dish, suppress your ability to taste saltiness in a dish, but actually enhances your ability to taste umami. And so again, it's the noise in this case that is impacting our taste. And if you know that, you can then start designing around it, either by giving out your passengers noise-cancelling headphones to block out the engine noise and so improve the taste of the food, and thereafter think about matching the music sonically to the foods that you serve in the air.
Which is something that some airlines have done when designing first-class entrees, because that's the only place you get food anymore. So British Airways went for an umami-rich menu. If you're not familiar with the fifth taste, umami, it's foods like tomatoes, parmesan, beef, mushrooms, seaweed, all foods that are high in umami and taste better in the sky at high altitudes, which is a very good guide for you when you're at the airport and you're picking out snacks for yourself for the flight. Get something high in umami. Okay, so that's airplane food and drink. Now we're going to focus on music and sound, specifically what Charles Spence calls sonic seasoning. Talk about some of the experiments you've done and some of the research you've done surrounding changing the taste of food using music and sound.
So we've been working for about 15 years now in the world of how sound affects taste and how sound was kind of the forgotten flavor sense. I think it was really an experiment we did in 2007. We had 150 people coming for an event. We decided to play the sounds of the sea and serve people oysters. Or play farmyard chicken noises instead, modern jazz or something else. Asked people to taste the oyster and rate how much they enjoyed it and how salty it was. And kind of the amazing result that we couldn't really believe at first was that people enjoyed the oysters more when listening to the sound of the sea. And since then, we've been just kind of expanding one stage further into kind of the even more surprising effect of sound, particularly music on taste, because music has no obvious relationship with what we're tasting. And yet we find that when we bring people to the lab in Oxford, and if you get 10 people or 20, you find that there is consistency in the response, that most people will associate sweet tasting foods, sweet smelling foods with high pitched sounds. Bitter tasting foods like black coffee and dark chocolate go with low pitched sounds instead. Sharp sounds for sour tastes. And so we've built up this kind of almost like a musical menu that people will associate with different tastes and flavors. We kind of pass those results then to sound designers, sound artists, composers, and they will create soundscapes or bits of music. And then we do the kind of the killer experiment where we bring lots of people together, give them something to taste and change the music, play sweet music followed by sour music, and see how their ratings of one and the same food or drink change. And time after time now, they do change. And we've been able to build up now kind of a repertoire of music, musical styles that will accentuate sweetness, sourness, bitterness, that will bring out the creaminess of a chocolate. We're able to bring out the spiciness of a spicy mango salad simply by playing the appropriate music. So this is the whole new world of sensploration, if you will. It doesn't work on everybody, but for those who it does, it's kind of like a surprising, engaging, fun, maybe almost mindful a way of approaching food and drink.
So if you're eating something sweet and then you listen to the particular kind of music that's supposed to enhance it, does it make it sweeter? Does it make it more enjoyable?
You have to start kind of with something that already has a bit of what you're interested in, a bit of sweetness, a bit of bitterness. So like, you know, black coffee with a little bit of sugar in it. If we play the sweet music, that ever so slightly sweetened coffee will taste sweeter than it did before. And I think it's really about accentuating something that's already there. If I gave you something that had a little bit less sugar in it than normal, maybe I could dial back up the sweetness sonically. And that's kind of exactly the sort of thing that's going on now in places like the Jin Cafe in Vietnam, where they deliberately have reduced the sugar content of their cakes, their pastries, their drinks, but make sure to play sweet music 24/7. So that hopefully the customer's experience is of the same sweetness they always know and love, but it's delivered with a little bit less of the sugar on the tongue and a little bit more sweetness in the ear.
Now, I think that the whole idea is fascinating, but the dessert restaurant works because they only serve sweet things. This would obviously be harder to do at restaurants where people are on different courses. Some people are eating sweet, some are eating spicy, some are eating sour. You couldn't curate music for an entire restaurant to suit the palate of everybody inside eating. But Charles says that restaurants can still curate their music towards the palate.
It could be to bring out a taste, as in our kind of research on sonic seasoning. But it could also be to enhance the perceived ethnicity of a dish. That lasagna is going to taste oh so much more Italian, authentically Italian, with a bit of Pavarotti and a bit of opera in the background than it will with a bit of sitar music, say. So you can use music to bring out authenticity in a dish. And I have other colleagues and managers who have read the research showing that people will spend more with classical music than with top 40 music. And this is true in a wine shop. It's true in the supermarket. It's true in the restaurant.
What is the biological / psychological purpose of having sound connected to taste? Is there one? Is this something we know?
It could be just a sort of accidental result of the way the mind is wired. But it could also be that there are sort of, you know, strong biological drivers, evolutionary drivers for this. We do seem to be drawn to foods that make noise, the crispy, the crunchy, the crackly, the creamy, the carbonated, even the squeaky. Noisy foods don't directly deliver any benefit. They don't signal any nutrition. But what I suspect they're doing is in fruits and vegetables, a noisier apple, a louder carrot probably is a fresher carrot and hence preserves more of its nutrients.
So I was asking Charles if he could use this method of playing music to make certain foods taste better on kids. Like if kids don't want to eat fruits and vegetables, if you're like, check it out. And then you just put this music on, they don't even know what's happening.
Yeah.
And suddenly carrots taste sweeter and they want to eat their fruits and vegetables. I wonder if that's a possibility.
I think anything you can do to get kids to eat vegetables is a good idea, at least worth a try.
I wonder if it would work. I mean, he said this doesn't work on everyone. I do like the idea, though, of, you know, playing music that sounds like the sea for eating oysters or listening to Pavarotti and eating Italian. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, one last word from Linda Perry. Actually, like, we're going to let her say some paragraphs and stuff, and a new way to stay in touch with the podcast. We'll see you on the other side of this break. It is cocktail hour with our one and only sponsor, our buddies over at Heritage Distilling Company. And if you've been hearing me talk about Heritage, but you have yet to try it, listen to this. Their brown sugar bourbon, BSB, was just named the best flavored whiskey in the world at the 2018 World Whiskies Award. I have to admit, I am not a big bourbon fan, and I like this bourbon because it's a little bit sweet. It has that warm whiskey feeling, notes of brown sugar and cinnamon, perfect in a flask if you're out in cold weather, and super nice at night around a campfire if you're camping. But if you're not a bourbon fan, Heritage has all kinds of flavored vodkas, classic vodkas, and gins, so you can construct your perfect cocktail. Go to heritagedistilling.com to look at all of their spirits, to order a bottle right to your door, or to find some really great cocktail recipes. Linda Perry is married to the actor, talk show host, and producer Sarah Gilbert. And they have a really, really sweet proposal story. They got engaged while on a picnic with Sarah's two kids in tow. And I am so nosy and such a voyeur for love stories. I like to know how everybody met. I want to know your engagement story. I love these things. So I feel like in the past several years, people have gotten down on any public proposal. You know, like there's a lot of YouTube proposals, a lot of millennials doing this. And people are like, can't you just do it privately? But I've seen a couple public proposals, and it's so fun to watch. I've seen three proposals, and I think it's so sweet and fun. So here's Linda being sweet and fun. Don't at me, whatever the kids are saying to yourself. Is that how it goes?
That is not how it goes.
How does that? What does that mean?
Don't at me. Yes.
Yeah.
But then you sort of trailed off
okay.
with a few other additives.
I'm cool.
We got a bunch of food to have a picnic at the park. And, you know, there was a guy that was sitting at the park, like a street musician playing guitar. He said, let's put our blanket here. We got music. Great. I tell the kids to go have him play their favorite songs. And I already told him to, I planted the guy. And I said, you know, learn these songs and the kids are going to come up to you. And they didn't know. and ask you to play certain songs and just be ready to play them. And Sarah kept on going, God, that is so crazy that this guy knows all these songs. And then I had T-shirts made, 5 shirts that said, will you marry me? Question mark. I had all the shirts in my backpack. Then I had planted a string section and a horn section in the park with people just sitting around. And one of our favorite songs was Love Song by The Cure. And so I got on my knees, and then the band started playing the horns, the strings, and they started showing up, and Sarah was like, what the hell is going on? Hmm. And I started pulling out the shirts, and one by one, it would be, will you marry me? And I had 5 shirts on, and then I had the kids wearing shirts that just said yes. And she looked at them and looked at me, and then right behind her, she didn't know that the whole family crept up behind her. So her mom, her sister, my mom, my sister, my family, we're all behind her. And then one of Sarah's favorite songs is a song called Missing You by John Waite from the 80s. And when she said yes, he came out with the guitar and played that song for her. And it was a pretty big, elaborate proposal. It was pretty awesome.
You gave me the chills. I can't believe that John Waite came out. That's amazing. What a beautiful day.
Isn't that cool? She's like, what the hell? Anyways, but it was really great.
Yeah, you did it. Now that you have to try to top that some other time in your life.
No, I don't think so. That's going to only happen once. When I met Sarah, I knew I was going to marry her, and that opportunity was only going to happen one time. I had to go all out.
And that was Linda Perry's last meal. Linda is currently collaborating with Intuit QuickBooks on a new campaign called Backing You, which helps independent artists be seen, heard, and celebrated. Thanks to Professor Charles Spence, you can check out his new book, Gastrophysics, The New Science of Eating. This episode was produced by Aaron Mason and me. Music, as always, by Prom Queen, except for that rendition of What's Up, that was by producer Aaron and me. And please don't be shy. Let's be friends. Earlier in the show, I promised a new way for us to keep in touch. I studied media arts and communication in college, and I learned a term that I remember today. It's one of the few things I remember from college. I am a, quote, technological laggard. I am not ever the first on anything new and technological. So today, I opened an Instagram account.
Slow down.
Welcome.
Here comes the future.
Oh, my God. The future is now. So you can find us on Instagram at Your Last Meal Podcast. Please follow us so we don't look like a bunch of losers. 2 followers. And this way, when Aaron and I go to New York City next week for the James Beard Awards, you can follow along on our journey. I have planned an all-day pizza eating tour through Brooklyn. We will be taking pictures so you can follow along. We are going to be eating a 4-course meal at the James Beard Awards. Mm-hmm. This way you know what we ate. And I'm hoping to go to Smorgasburg in Brooklyn, which is the biggest outdoor food market in the country. So if you want to follow along on Food Fun, we're at Your Last Meal Podcast on Instagram.
Guys, if you're on Instagram, why are you there if not for pictures of food?
I know. I love pictures of food. I'm Rachel Bell. And until next time, this is Your Last Meal.